You're listening to MMA Rated Radio, brought to you by Crooked Jaw. Check them out at crookedjaw.net. Ariel Helwani here with you again, being joined today by MMAmania.com's Jesse Holland. We're getting ready to chat about the spectacle up north that will be UFC 83, no doubt. And you know, as a longtime MMA fan who just so happens to be from Montreal, this event is a long time coming. And I definitely speak on behalf of my Canadian people when I say Saturday night can't come soon enough. Okay, now that I got that out of the way, let's get to our UFC 83 discussion. Jesse, welcome to MMA Rated Radio.
Thank you. Pleasure is mine.
Hey, it's great to be talking with you again. And there's so much to talk about here. And I think I want to start at the top, because this is really, you can make a case for this being a one fight show, maybe two, but really everyone's talking about Sarah St. Pierre too. Definitely a lot of chatter going on between these two guys. And it's almost a year to the day when Matt Serra pulled off the upset of all upsets by defeating George Rush St. Pierre. Is there any chance in hell that he could strike twice and pull off another upset?
Well, I certainly hope not for his sake, especially being in Montreal, because they'll be calling for his head. But in all seriousness, I don't see it happening again. I can't believe it happened the first time, even though I saw it with my own eyes, and I'm not going to discredit that win by Serra. If you look at the fight, he did everything right, and GSP did everything wrong. But I don't see it happening again, so long as George St. Pierre comes and brings a fight that I think he's ready to bring.
Now, we've seen sort of a revitalized George St. Pierre since that fight. He's had two victories, one over Josh Koscheck, and then another interim title victory over Matt Hughes in December at UFC 79. If you're Matt Serra now, and you've been sitting on the sideline this past year, are you trying to bring in the same sort of game plan to defeat St. Pierre again? Are you going to look to stand and bang with him, or maybe try to catch him off guard and take this to the ground? Because we all know that Serra has great jiu-jitsu skills.
I think Matt Serra is going to do the exact same thing he did the last time. We heard it from his striking coach, Ray Longo, made the comments a few days ago. They're going in with the exact same game plan, and to be perfectly honest with you, why not? It worked the first time. He's got to just stick with what works.
So you believe that's a good choice, right?
I think it's absolutely a good choice. He does not want to be on the ground with George St. Pierre. I don't think he's strong enough to pull off a submission. And you've seen what happens to people when they're underneath GSP. They just get pounded out.
Now, GSP, on the other hand, do you think that he's going to try to, again, because, you know, in their first fight back in April of 07, he showed no intentions of trying to take this fight to the ground. Do you think that he maybe has learned his lesson here and will try to shoot on him and try to work from the ground?
I think he's learned a lesson, but I don't think it has anything to do with whether or not he takes it to the ground. If you look at the first fight, look at the difference between his approach to Matt Serra in their first fight versus his approach to a fight like he did against Frank Trigg, a fight he did against Sean Sherk, where he went in, he was aggressive, he was an animal, and he was relentless. He didn't do that against Matt Serra, and he took Matt Serra lightly. Now, I know he's going to talk about the injury, and there's been a lot of speculation back and forth, but I interviewed GSP right before his first fight with Serra. He looked me right in the eyes and said, I'm 100% healthy. My mental game is 100%. I'm ready to go. He went in with a little lackadaisical attitude, and he got punished for it. He's not going to do that this time. He's angry. He's tired of Matt Serra's comments. He's tired of all the back and forth. He said, he said. He's coming in on a mission, and Matt Serra's in trouble.
Now, much has been made of the Serra's problem, excuse me, St. Pierre's problems, mental problems, saying that now he goes in and meets with a sports psychologist, and it's really changed his game, and he knows how to come into a fight with a clear mind. Do you think that being the first event, UFC event in Montreal, we all know that he, he's fought at the Bell Centre before for TKO, but this is the first big UFC event in Montreal at the Bell Centre. He's fighting in the main event for that title against this guy who's, been running his mouth for the last few months. Do you think that maybe this could mess up St. Pierre more than he's expecting it will be?
I don't think so at all. I think it's going to have the opposite effect. I think it's going to energize him. I think it's going to make him even more deadly. And I think he's just going to come out, like I said, like a man on a mission, and just put this thing away very early.
Are you interested in the fact that Serra is not getting any type of respect from the MMA community in terms of it almost seems like, again, even with the odds, he's coming in as the underdog again, and this is the champ. You think back to other title defenses, even a guy who's making his first. Very rare that you see a champion, A, be an underdog, and B, have to defend his belt on enemy territory in the hometown of the challenger. Are you surprised by that?
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised because of the type of athlete that George St. Pierre is. He's young. He's got the body, he's good looking, and he's got a great skill set when it comes to mixed martial arts. And the UFC and the fans very desperately want him to be the poster boy for the UFC in the coming year. They want him to be the guy who leads the charge into a total mainstream exposure. And he needs this win, and he needs to do it with making a statement in a big way. And I think, you know, maybe it's not fair to Matt Serra, but that's just the way the game's played.
It seems like it's going to be a foregone conclusion that if St. Pierre defeats Serra on Saturday night, that he'll be defending that title against John Fitch. That said, though, do you think that Serra's going to get a rematch? You don't hear much about it, and with all the sort of disrespect that he's got, even with the countdown show, you'd think if you didn't know anything about this, you'd think that Serra is the challenger again. Do you think that we will see a third fight between these two guys if St. Pierre comes out on top?
I don't think so. I think what's going to happen is Matt Serra is going to get his long-awaited match against Matt Hughes, if Matt Hughes is still interested. I think that's the direction they're going to go, because I think they're going to make St. Pierre go on to bigger and better things. This wasn't the way the story was supposed to play out in everybody's minds, and I think they're really looking to put it behind them, especially the way, you know, the layoff here really hurt Matt Serra. And the layoff has also created all this this talking back and forth, and this is a story that I think is ready to end. Normally, it would create some drama. Normally, it's the kind of thing, like you look at a fight like BJ Penn and Sean Sherk. I mean, this is a dramatic storyline that you can get behind, two guys that really can't stand each other. But the difference in that fight is, you know, you can really see a scenario where Sean Sherk can win this fight, and you can see a scenario where BJ Penn can win this fight. I don't know if we can say that about the Serra St. Pierre fight. So I think if St. Pierre comes out on top like everyone expects him to, he's just going to move on, and Matt Serra is going to go back to where he was.
So you're not giving Serra a chance in hell here?
I'm not, and it hurts me to say that because I'm one of the biggest Serra fans out there. I just don't see it happening.
Do you think that he's sort of acted professionally throughout this, you know, with the Frenchie comments and all that? You say that you're a big Serra fan. Has that... all that comments coming from his part, has that made you lose a little respect for him?
It's actually made me have more respect for him because I knew Matt Serra before he won the title, and this is the guy that Matt Serra is. So no one can ever say that becoming champion or getting all this exposure has ever changed him or ever made him into a different person or a corporate man. This is Matt Serra, and Matt Serra's attitude is, you know, what you see is what you get. You know, take it or leave it.
Couldn't agree more. As much as it pained me to see my fellow countryman down last April, I thought the way he handled it after winning, he wasn't pulling a Michael Bisping, so to speak. You know, he was doing that thing with his hands, shrugging it off, doing the flip. It just, to me, it just seemed very real and legit, and you couldn't help but feel sort of genuinely happy for the guy.
Yeah, I think it was a long time coming. I mean, Matt Serra has really paid his dues in the UFC. He's worked hard. He happens to be a very talented fighter. He's a small guy for welterweight, but, you know, I was happy for him. He deserved it, and it's a shame we didn't get to see him fight Matt Hughes because that was a storyline that really interested me.
Yeah, I mean, the build-up for that one with the tough six was commendable, but, I mean, we're going to probably see those two guys face each other if Serra loses come Saturday night. All right, so we got the first bout out of the way. Serra St. Pierre 2, and everyone, including yourself, is expecting a GSP victory. Now, the co-main event, if you can call it that, is Rich Franklin versus Travis Luter in a bout that's two guys who recently got their butts whipped by Anderson Silva, but many people forget how well Travis Luter performed against Silva. So, you know, give the guy credit. We always think about him not being able to make weight, but a great performance on his part last February in 07. That said, you got Franklin, a guy who really needs this victory. I mean, he's had two devastating losses. Luter, we haven't seen him in the octagon for 14 months. How are you expecting this one to play out? Lots of interesting storylines between these two.
This one I see is going to be all Franklin, without a doubt. I think the layoff here is really going to hurt Luter. It's been too long. And Franklin, you know, give him credit. He was destroyed by Anderson Silva on two different occasions, and he's right back in the mix saying, hey, I'm not going anywhere. I'm here to fight.
Do you think that if Franklin defeats Luter and then maybe goes on, a 3-4-5 win streak, can he get another shot at Silva?
That's hard to say. I mean, 3-4-fight win streak in the UFC, could be a year and a half, 2 years. You know, who knows what the landscape will be at that time, whether Silva's still at this weight. You know, but Franklin's going to be here for a long time, so it's not totally unreal to think that he could do that again. I don't know if they'd make that happen just because of the way he lost. It wasn't even close in either fight. But Franklin's not going anywhere. He lost the first time, and it was a horrible loss. He bounced right back, and he took care of Jason McDonald with a TKO. Came back right after that and fought Yushin Okami to a decision. And, you know, he went in and lost again to Silva. But I would rather see Franklin continue to win and fight a guy like Dan Henderson if Henderson's still around at this weight.
Franklin might be coming in as a wounded fighter. He's coming off of surgery. Also, the sudden passing of his father. You don't expect any of that to come into play?
I don't think so, because Rich Franklin, I've talked to him before, he's mentally tough. He's a game guy. I mean, once he's in the octagon, nothing else matters except him and the other guy. So I don't think anything is going to affect him. Not the previous losses, not, you know, the tragedy in his family. He's going to be there ready to fight, and I don't think Luter is up to par.
Now, here's an interesting situation to consider. If Travis Luter wins, and we all know how thin the middleweight division is, it seems as though Silva's going to be fighting Okami next, and then who knows where he goes from there. Does he earn the right to maybe get another shot at Silva?
I think he does, and I think what happened in their first fight has a lot to do with that decision. You know, a lot of people are saying, hey, here's a guy, you know, here's the first guy that we've seen in the UFC, aside from Dan Henderson in round one of their fight, who actually was hanging with Anderson Silva and actually making it a fight. So, I could absolutely see them fighting again.
Okay, so in this one, you're liking Franklin, another pretty easy decision. The UFC has listed as the third fight from the top, Nate Quarry versus Caleb Starnes, but I'm going to skip that one for a second. I go to Charles McCarthy versus Michael Bisping because, again, these two guys have been running their mouths for the last couple of months now, and this is an interesting one for Bisping. He's making his middleweight debut after a disappointing loss to Rashad Evans in the main event of UFC 78 in Newark. Prior to that, he had the controversial victory over Matt Hamill, and Charles McCarthy is a guy who we haven't seen in the octagon for many, many years. You might not even remember. This was a victory in November of 2006 over Gideon Ray, now fighting in the IFL. Bisping, some might say that he's being served up a pretty easy opponent in his middleweight debut. How do you think this one's going to play out?
You know, I would say for two guys who are talking so much trash, you would think we were talking about, Vanderlei Silva, Chuck Liddell here. I mean, these guys are carrying on like they've been tearing up the division. You know, you mentioned Michael Bisping and his disappointing loss. His wins are disappointing. I mean, here's a guy who came out of tough three expecting to, you know, really make some noise in the division, and he's come out with a whimper. I mean, Michael Bisping needs to have the kind of dominating win that people expect from a superstar. Right now, we haven't seen that. I mean, his win against Hamill was a gift. You know, he looked completely exhausted against Rashad Evans. I mean, if he doesn't come out here and absolutely destroy Charles McCarthy, then, you know, there's nothing left to say about the graduating class of Tough Three. I mean, we saw what happened to Kendall Grove. You know, Bisping needs to make a statement here.
Are you expecting him to do so?
I am, absolutely. I mean, Charles McCarthy, you know, he's talking a great game, and I know he likes the nickname Chainsaw, but, you know, realistically, what has he done to, you know, really expect to come in there and do anything great? I mean, you talk about the win against Gideon Ray in 2006. Before that was a loss to, you know, Trevor Garrett. McCarthy doesn't have any big wins. He lost against Loizzo. He lost against Bielkinen. This is Bisping all the way.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I give these two guys props. You know, if you're going to build up your fight a bit more, surround some hype around it. But, you know, you really look at, especially McCarthy, it's very curious to hear a guy talk so much when he really hasn't done that much in the sport. Couldn't agree with you more. I think that this should be an easy one for the count. Okay, let's go back to Nate Quarry and Caleb Starnes. This one, interesting. Caleb is, Canadian boy coming out of the West Coast, BC area, and Nate Quarry is, you know, one guy who was on the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, and he, you know, quickly rises up the rankings, fights Rich Franklin, and no one will ever forget that knockout loss to Rich Franklin. We see it time and time again, and then he comes back after almost 2 years away from the sport due to a very, very dangerous spinal cord surgery, and he comes back with a pretty impressive victory over Pete Sell. I mean, Pete Sell, no one will confuse with one of the top guys in the division, but still, you know, he came back after such a long layoff. Are you expecting him to continue to roll, or will Starnes feel a little more comfortable in his home country?
I think Starnes is going to feel more comfortable. I don't know if that's going to make a difference in this fight. This is really a great story to see to see him come back after that surgery and after all the hardship he's been through, and especially with that win against Pete Sell. You know, Pete Sell was talking all kinds of trash about their first fight, and he came in there and put him away. And, you know, he looked rusty and he looked tired, but, hey, give the guy credit. 2 years, and he went three rounds and ended it with a KO. I mean, I'm looking for him to be even better this time around. And, you know, this could go to a decision because of the wily type of fighter that Khalid Starnes is. But I think it's definitely going to be Nate's night.
What do you make of Starnes? Because I remember during the Ultimate Fighter 3, which at the time seemed like the most stacked cast in the history of the show, and a lot of people, including myself, were thinking that he might have a chance at winning the contract. And then now, he's had four fights since leaving the show. He's 2-2. Granted, one of those losses was to Yushin Okami, a very game opponent. But he's coming off of another loss to Alan Belcher. In between those two fights, he's had a win over Chris Leben, and his first victory in the UFC was against Danny Abadi. And, you know, I haven't really heard much from him expectedly since then. Do you think this is must-win for Starnes? If he loses and then falls to under 500 in his UFC career, can he see the outs of the UFC?
I think so. I think it's very important for him to, I mean, he could, you know, realistically, he could still be around if he puts on an amazing performance. I mean, you know, you have a fight of the night, they're not going to get rid of you no matter what your record is. But if you look at his record, speaking of, all of his wins have come in the first round, with the exception of his war with Chris Leben at UFC 71. All of his wins are first-round wins, which, you know, you look at going back against Alan Belcher in the second round, Yushin Okami in the third round. I don't know what it was, and you kind of compare that to tough three against Ken LaCrove. He just seems to, I don't want to say give up, but he just seems to get into this mode where he doesn't seem motivated to fight anymore. I don't know if it's conditioning or if it's just a mental breakdown, and I think that's something that he needs to overcome. He needs to show that he's the kind of fighter that in round one is the same guy in round three, much like a Yushin Okami, who starts off slow and by the third round is an absolute terror. I mean, that's the kind of thing that we need to see from Khalid Starnes, that he can go all the way and he can make things happen in the third round. I think that's important in deciding whether or not he stays.
Yeah, it's an interesting career for him. He reminds me very much of Chris Leben, and right now it might seem like he may be better suited to fight in the WEC, but it remains to be seen. We'll have more insight on that come Saturday night. A fight that I am really looking forward to that hasn't been getting a lot of play, especially online, is Mark Bocek against Mac Danzig. This is Danzig's second fight in the UFC officially, and he's moving down to 155 after winning tough six in the welterweight division. Bocek is no slouch. This is going to be his third fight, and again, another Canadian boy, this time coming from Ontario. He's coming off of a win over Doug Evans, who, you know, Evans is an interesting guy in itself. He came on the scene with an impressive performance against Huerta, but now that win might not look as good given Evans' last loss in Elite XC. But that said, these two guys make a case for them being rising stars within that lightweight division. How are you expecting Danzig to perform in his lightweight UFC debut?
I think he's going to perform very well. I don't want to go crazy with the praise over Mac Danzig. I mean, he is a very talented fighter, obviously. We've seen him fight. You know, but coming into that fight at the Tough Six finale, you know, he was coming off two losses. One of those was a KO loss in Pride. So, I mean, he's not invincible. He's going to be in a new weight class, and he's going to be going up against a tough guy in Bocek. And, you know, he took care of Doug Evans. You know, you mentioned the Evans fight against Huerta. You know, who knows what kind of fighter Evans is based on that. But Bocek got pounded out by Frankie Edgar. So I don't know if he has a chance against Danzig, and we'll see how Danzig responds to 155.
Do you think he will come out on top, though?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so do I. I mean, Danzig has a lot more fights under his belt, and thus far looked pretty impressive, especially on the show. Let's jump around here because there's still a bunch of fights to go, and I want to move quickly through them. Jason McDonald, Joe Dirksen, two Canadian fighters who Canadian fans out there might be noticing them doing a lot of talking on Rogers Sportsnet site. McDonald was a guy at a time that we had big hopes for, especially in that middleweight division. He was known as the tough killer. Now seems to be slowing down a bit. Do you think that he can get back on track and pick up a second victory in his career over El Derte?
I think so. I mean, the Dirksen that I saw against Ed Herman at UFC 78, He looked like a guy that's had way too many fights. He looked like he was, you know, he was lost out there. I don't know if he can get back to his winning ways. You know, McDonald, I don't know what to say about McDonald. I'm not really a big fan of his just because he talks so much and he touts himself. You know, perfect example, he calls himself the tough killer, you know, but he also has two losses to people who've graduated from the Ultimate Fighter, Patrick Cote and Khalid Starnes. So it's kind of an identity crisis here. I'd like to see him come back strong, especially after his loss to Yushin Okami. I didn't expect him to beat Franklin, but I think he's going to come out on top this time. I think Dirksen's just too weathered.
Okay, moving along, Ed Herman, Damian Maia. This one's very interesting. Maia, we all know about his Brazilian jiu-jitsu skills, one of the top in the business, and Herman is on a roll lately. He started out his career a little slowly, but now looking like the better fighter in terms of the guys who came out of Tough 3 compared to Kendall Grove. He'll be looking to get his fourth win in a row. This one, again, not getting a lot of play because of St. Pierre and Sarah at the top, but very much looking forward to it. Do you think that Herman can pick up his fourth consecutive victory on Saturday?
I think he can. I think he's going to be he's a little too good to get caught in any of those submissions. And he's totally energized, especially after the KO. We mentioned Dirksen a few moments ago, especially after the KO over Dirksen. He looks like a new fighter, the way he just he tore through Chris Price. You know, he tapped out Scott Smith. I mean, I think he's back, and I think he's, you know, like you said, he's going to be the guy that people are remembering from Tough 3 and not Kendall Grove.
Velasquez, Cain Velasquez against Brad Morris, two UFC newcomers, and Velasquez, a guy who everyone is sort of touting as the future of the heavyweight division. Even his teammate, John Fitch, was in an interview on 5OuncesOfPain.com, had been praising him, saying that this guy, everyone's going to be talking about him in a couple of years. Is he going to be, you know, are we going to get to see really the future of this division on Saturday? And can you, you know, maybe shed a little more insight into what makes this guy so great?
I think what makes him great is his ability to perform. I mean, you know, traditionally we think of heavyweights, we think of slow, lumbering guys. Here's a guy who comes out, he's fast, he's exciting, he knows what he's doing, you know, but with his experience, it's hard to say whether or not he's, you know, he's the next big thing in the heavyweight division. I think that remains to be seen.
Okay.
So this fight will have a lot to do with that.
Yeah, this one, it will be interesting, always when you have two newcomers, to see how they perform. Let's just quickly say that there are a few more fights on the card. Hironoka Goulet, which Goulet everyone knows is from Montreal. Clemente Stout and Day Belcher. In any one of those, are you expecting anything that we should look out for?
I don't think so. I think these fights are going to go exactly the way we predict. I think Stout is going to come out on top. I can't believe Goulet is still fighting in the UFC. I think they must really like him, or it might have something to do with Montreal. But
so you think Hironoka?
I'm sorry?
You think Hironoka will come out on top in that one?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
And then Day Belcher.
That's a tough one.
It is a tough one. Jason Day is making his UFC debut as well, and he's coming off of a pretty controversial victory over David Loazo. And Belcher, I mean, anybody who's named the talent, you have to respect, but he's also coming off a victory over Caleb Starnes. So
yeah, Belcher is kind of up and down, and I don't want to go crazy over Day just because of the Loizzo fight. This one, it's hard to call. It could go either way.
All right, so that's your one toss-up on the entire card. Wow, that seems like a pretty stacked card in terms of fights. And Jesse, I appreciate you taking the time for breaking it down for us. Always great. That's Jesse Holland of MMAmania.com, one of the best MMA sites on the internet, without a doubt. I appreciate you talking with us, and good luck with your picks.
My pleasure. We'll see you next time.